In this episode of IBEC Responds, IBEC Chief Economist Ger Brady discusses key findings from our 2024 Q1 Economic Outlook Report with IBEC economists Hazel Ahern-Flynn and Morad Mejdi.
Welcome to another episode of IBEC Responds, where we're going to look at our new economic outlook. I'm here today with our senior economist, Hazel Ahern-Flynn, who'll be well known to people on the podcast.
Hi, Ger.
And I'm also here with our new economist on the team, Morad Mejdi, who's going to be talking us through some of his insights on the economy today and what we're looking at. I'll turn to you first, Hazel. What we've seen in the global economy is probably one that we're seeing is a very uncertain environment globally, but one that's fairly robust domestically. What are we seeing in today's outlook?
Yeah, I think that's a good place to kick off. So maybe two main takeaways from the outlook. First of all, that the Irish economy is performing very robustly given the circumstances at the moment. So as you mentioned, there's quite a lot happening globally, most of it relating to kind of downside risks. Having said that, given that backdrop, we've seen fairly robust growth. And maybe the second point to emphasise also is just looking at the year just gone. Some of our headline economic figures definitely weren't as strong last year as they would have been in the kind of years running up. But it's worth remembering that some of the driving factors in that are kind of once-off issues. And we're not expecting that to be a longer run trend in terms of growth in the economy.
And those once-off issues really being about certain products that are exported falling, that climbed really high in 22 and fell in 23 being the main drivers, as well as some big infrastructure projects being finished out in 23 and not being repeated again in 24 effectively. Is that the main picture there?
That's it exactly. Yeah, that's what people are summing up as post-COVID adjustments. So you had this big and very rapid rise in export value over COVID, very highly concentrated in biopharma. And then obviously post-COVID, some of the demand for very specific products related to COVID dropped off. And because of that sudden spike, you get a base effect in our annual numbers for last year. And that's how you see a negative GDP figure for the year. But despite that, I suppose the feeling on the ground and particularly in the domestic economy for Ireland was much more positive. And that's reflected quite strongly in the employment figures that we have for last year, where we added about 90,000 new jobs to the economy. And that's really one of the points worth remembering, is that it's those once-off issues around timing and very specific products for export that were impacting the numbers. It's not necessarily a structural issue that we expect to continue to impact over the coming years.
And then one of the big things we've seen in recent years, Hazel, has been this rise of inflation. We're probably in a better place now as we head into 24. We've got some data today from the US, which is a bit mixed, but in general the Irish inflation numbers coming down, we're seeing a normalization of what has been a fairly exceptional period.
That's it, yeah. So we've had about 2 years of really rapid inflation growth, kicked off by that initial energy shock that filtered through into some staple goods and then further into services. What we're now starting to see almost 2 years on from the initial invasion of Ukraine that began all of this is that it's starting to wash out of the Irish inflation figures. That doesn't mean that prices are coming back down. They're levelling off at a higher level, and in some cases a significantly higher level than they would have in the past couple of years. But that fall in inflation, one, means that we're going to start to see real incomes rising next year or over the course of this year and into next year. And that's a boost on the consumption side. And then on the other side, inflation falling for Ireland and some positive signs there, although, as you say, mixed in the US, but positive indications in the EU, mean that the world's central banks may also have the space and the comfort there to start introducing interest rate cuts over the course of the year.
Turning to you then, Morad, we've got possibilities of interest rate cuts this year. What's your view on where we are in that cycle, what we're likely to see? And, you know, obviously, before we even start, there's the disclaimer that none of us know the answer to this question. But what's your best guess at interest rates and the path of them this year? And what's going to drive, what should people look out for in terms of what's going to drive that?
So the United States and the Eurozone have come from a relatively high rate of inflation as compared to the last number of decades. This is as a result of interest rates having been increased quite dramatically. And we've since seen that decrease. However, there are differences between the two economies. There's been an attempt to coordinate interest rates between the ECB and the Federal Reserve.
But what are those differences, I suppose, Morad, in between the US and where the the Eurozone is? What's driven inflation differently?
So the main drivers of inflation began from a similar situation. So you had supply constraints as a result of COVID. And the key difference was in energy. So, for example, the United States has a lot more domestic energy capacity, whereas the EU had relied on energy supply chains, and particularly from Russia. Obviously, the invasion of the Ukraine had put pay to that, and we had to see new sources of energy in the European Union.
And that ultimately means higher costs and has fed
Eurozone
inflation.
Exactly. So energy is an input into pretty much all forms of production. So as soon as energy increases, that feeds on to every other type of economic activity. And then
if you see that come true, Murad, I suppose we've got inflation happening in the US that's very demand driven. It was driven by a huge amount of the impetus and stimulus that was given into the economy during COVID, and that's taking time to wash out. You've got energy has brought a lot of the inflation that's happened in the Eurozone. How does that then lead to different interest rate paths? Does it mean that inflation is going to come down quicker in Europe than the US, for example? And does that mean we're going to see interest rates cut sooner here than in the US?
Yeah. So like what you said, there's key differences in the drivers. So the United States has been driven by demand, particularly in lines of services. We saw with the figures from the Federal Reserve yesterday that whilst their headline inflation was higher at 3.6%, the inflation in services is estimated somewhere in the region of about 8%. Back home in the ECB, in the Eurozone, we've seen a much more muted increase of about 2.4%. And this would traditionally indicate that the ECB is more primed for a rate cut. If you look a bit further into it, you'll see that the major economies in the Eurozone aren't performing at in the same manner that the United States is, and their economies would be in need of a cut. However, the ECB, their place of comfort, it has been to follow the Fed's lead. And there's numerous reasons for this, but they tried their best to coordinate with the Fed and not move ahead of them. The issue now is that we're seeing a deteriorating condition in the Eurozone compared to that of the United States. So there's a balance to be struck here for Lagarde and Co. in the ECB between cutting too early compared to the United States, or leaving it and waiting for the United States and possibly cutting too late and seeing a deterioration in the Eurozone. So the United States, they're quite afraid of cutting too early and seeing inflation increase. So there's those, the ECB has to balance this against the United States.
So if you're a person looking at a mortgage, or if your company looking at taking out debt, the challenge here is you've got the ECB really should cut, but don't know if they can. Mm-hmm. And the Fed are a little less sure if they should cut, and the ECB have to kind of follow them. So we're in a situation where we've seen an ECB decision to say today to hold. It's still more likely than not that they'll cut in June, in your view?
Before yesterday's figures, it looked a lot more likely that the United States was going to cut in June. Now, even markets are starting to bet a lot more on the ECB going ahead and cutting ahead of the United States. Whether we see that in actuality is another question. It's likely that it will be June, just because that's, the Federal Reserve and the ECB have both promised three rounds of cuts at 25 points each. And you wouldn't expect that they're going to backload the year and by cutting them all in Q3 and Q4.
So in effect, we're in a position where I suppose the next couple of cuts will probably more likely come quicker from the European Central Bank than the Fed, but that it mightn't be at the pace that we might have expected unless the Fed, unless inflation improves in the US as well.
Well, that's it. And we'll have to see if either the Fed or the ECB walk back on that promise of 75 basis cuts for the year.
Thanks, Murad. And Hazel, going back to you, the labour market in Ireland, we've added 90,000 jobs last year. Where are we heading, do we think, in the labour market? Because you hear so much about housing crisis. We've been adding enormous amounts of workers. And like, just to put it in context, we've added nearly 400,000 workers now in more or less 4 years. It's the quickest rate of employment growth in the history of the state. Surely it has to slow down. And are we going to see it? We haven't seen it yet, but are we going to see it?
Yes to both. So I suppose, look, we've been probably making the same comments in this area for a while now, which is employment growth continues unabated, and we're adding both jobs and workers to the labour force at a faster pace than we predict, more or less every year, for several years now. Looking over the figures that we have up to Q4 at the end of last year, we saw employment growth increase by about 3.5% and the labour force by just marginally over. And effectively what that means is we're absorbing the new labour we're introducing into the labour market at pretty much the same rate that we are we're finding it. And it's exactly as you say, that there's limits for any country or for any economy to how many people you can pull into the labour force, both from the existing population and in terms of inwards migration. And there's also a limit to the speed at which you can do that. So looking forward, on the demand side in terms of labour, it's still quite strong, despite cost pressures on businesses and particularly rising labour costs. That demand is still there. That's reflected in some of IBEC's own survey figures, where just about half of membership are planning to increase headcount this year. And that's despite a really close focus on costs and being quite challenged by the labour cost piece in particular. So the demand side for labour is quite strong. The main issue is where we get that supply from, and looking to the next year or two, that growth in labour force is expected to continue, but at a slower pace. It wouldn't be likely to continue at the kind of rate of pace of increase that we've seen over the last couple of years.
So we're seeing effectively a bit of a gradual slowdown in the labour market, and as you said, in the past couple of years, the labour market has spectacularly outperformed any kind of forecast or any metric that people had for it. So there's still a potential that we could have continued growth, but it is unlikely to continue at the kind of breakneck pace that we've seen in the last couple of years. And from a consumer point of view, we're seeing obviously inflation fall, labour market still growing. The outlook for the consumer is relatively good.
Yeah, it is relatively good. So I suppose if the story at the start of this podcast is the headline macroeconomic figures don't necessarily tell you the story on the ground, it's almost the inverse for consumers. So consumer sentiment is relatively negative, but what we know both from consumers reporting their own circumstances right now and also on the employment side and in terms of incomes is all relatively positive. So people feel concerned about the wider economy and future prospects, but current prospects are quite strong. Employment is high and rising, wages also increasing, and with inflation expected to come down further over the course of this year and next year, that means that real incomes will be rising again over this year and next year.
And I think it's one of the most interesting charts in our outlook, but also I think it's seen across the global economy at the moment, the reality that a lot of people are saying that they have very negative outlook on the economy, but their own personal circumstances are actually fairly good. And then you have, despite negative enough consumer sentiment generally, consumer spending has been fairly reasonably good as well. So we're seeing a kind of an almost a recession, or people have called it a vibe session, that the vibes are bad, but actually people are doing okay in terms of spending.
That's it exactly, yeah. In terms of the actually observing people's behaviour, it's relatively strong, spending's increasing. One kind of caveat to that maybe to take away is in nominal terms, spending is increasing on cards, people are out and about, and households have mostly absorbed a lot of the price pass-throughs from the inflation over the last couple of years. But in real terms, consumption is starting to slow. So it's kind of plateauing up to the last quarter of last year. And there's an indication there that households, on the back of good employment, rising wages, have been able to absorb these price increases. Again, that wouldn't have been possible forever. Luckily, there's kind of comfort on the horizon in terms of slowing inflation on that side. I think the last thing I would say on the labour market piece is when you're in a position like Ireland is, where we have a very tight labour market, that puts the focus an awful lot in terms of how efficiently we are using that labour in terms of delivering in productivity. And of course, as you know, productivity is the necessary driver for growth in GDP.
And when you say productivity, Hazel, some of our listeners, of course, our listenership is very, very intelligent people who all know what productivity is. But just in case anyone needed a quick refresher, what is productivity?
Absolutely, yes. So in very general terms, if you think of a business, they pay for their inputs, the goods and services that they buy. They combine those inputs with the labor of their workforce, and they create something that is worth more than the sum of its parts. And the difference between the cost of those inputs and that final value is the value add. When you take the value added across an entire economy and you divide it by, for example, the number of hours that went into the production in that economy, what you're left with is the productivity of labour. And it's the same if you want to think of it in those terms for the productivity of capital. You just do the same.
And like, just the final question, Hazel, if we look at the economy as a whole now, is the key takeaway from this podcast really that globally, there's a lot of challenge out there and a lot of uncertainty. Domestically, things are relatively robust, and that we're likely to see a continued divergence between those two things in 2024, that the global economy is going to be really challenged and the domestic economy is going to improve slightly.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. So it's the divergence between the two. And also, I suppose, the second key takeaway from the report is while Ireland has this sort of successful outcome and this breathing room, it's a good time to refocus on our own competitiveness and how we can safeguard that growth into the future.
Absolutely. Thanks very much, Hazel and Murad, for your inputs. Thank you for listening to IBEC Responds. Again, as always, the economic outlook will be up on the IBEC website, and it's also linked in the description below this podcast.
Thanks for listening to this episode of IBEC Responds. To listen to our full suite of podcasts, please visit ibec.ie/podcasts.